you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
This is The Thing About Cars, a podcast for car enthusiasts and the people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars. Ben and I are here at German Car Day Atlanta. How are you, Ben?
Oh, pretty good. This is technically the Deutsche Classic event.
The Deutsche Classic event, right. Deutsche Classic Atlanta. You know, you and I were talking earlier. I want to make sure we got this on recording just because I'm not sure it took earlier and it was very noisy at the time. But, you know, we're at German Car Day. There are tons of really cool looking German cars around. Why is it that I can't get a good brat or a good piece of schnitzel and some spätzle and a big, like, gallon-sized flagon of beer?
I guess the right vendors just didn't show up.
It just seems like such a crime.
Yeah, it does. It does. We've both been to Germany, so, you know, you get a nice chilly day like this and people in the street mingling around, and you just want that good German, delicious comfort.
Yeah, give me the German vibe, because it's awesome. And in spite of it being a cold and slightly wet day, there are a ton of people here.
There are, yeah. More cars than I thought would come.
More cars. And so here we are walking around and looking at all these things. It's German cars of a certain vintage, right?
Right. They're all 25 years or more of age.
Right. Which in our lifetimes means that the cars that I was admiring in high school are also here on the street, along with some stuff that's much, much older than that. What's the oldest thing we've seen?
Probably the Gogomobile delivery van.
Yeah.
Which I think dates to the 50s, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there's a 60s era Mercedes that's over there.
There is, yeah. It
looks something like a limousine.
Oh, yeah, that's a big old 600 Grosser model, which was designed for presidents, but I don't think any actually ever used one. But right. That's a 66 model.
Yeah. All in all, a totally fascinating show. The stereotype of German utilitarianism, you know, that kind of, I'm seeing things that sort of catch me by surprise, because that is the stereotype, right? Very efficient, very utilitarian, very precise engineering. But there is a German design sensibility, wouldn't you say?
Yes, there is. And the Germans really do have much more sense of style than people give them credit for. It's understated. It's not as flashy as, say, Italian style. But you know, you really look at the lines on some of these cars, and they're very tasty, very nicely done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Porsche alone. Porsche is
sure
slick and sexy and all that. But holy mackerel, there's so much history on these cars. And,
oh, yeah.
And the design sensibilities don't tend to change a whole lot over time. Like if I say Volkswagen to you, only until recently, you know, Volkswagen tend to have a very distinct shape if you're talking about a Beetle, right? Or if you're
sure
talking about a Golf, they all tend to have a certain body style that you're used to seeing. And only like in the 2000s did that change at all.
Even then it became its own, you know, continual familiar, you know, sort of thing. There's a familiar flavor,
mm-hmm,
you know, within the manufacturers. Like the earlier liquid-cooled VW era, you know, your Rabbits and Golfs and Sciroccos and things, they all had a certain kind of familiar feel to them. And I think all the German manufacturers are very good at that.
Yeah, yeah. It made sense to me, right? Because they just kept on improving on the thing over time. But a Sciroccò was always a Sciroccò, right?
It never. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what's the favorite? What's your favorite thing that you've seen so far? What has stood out to you today?
Oh, it's a really tough pick. I really can't narrow it down to one. There are so many that, given the opportunity, I would take home.
Yeah.
You know, some of the notables. There are a couple of, you know, like 1980s M5s. You know, they were these black, sexy, you know, kind of Darth Vader sedans. Just really, really amazing. The first generation M3, there's more of those here than I think I've seen before in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, those stick out in memory, you know, quite well. A couple of Porsches, a couple of 356s that just made me drool. And then on the one back row there was that really nice, you know, about 81, 82 Audi Quattro. That
yes
still looked like new.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
that thing just made me drop my jaw.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't think I would have a hard time determining if I could only take home one car. That would be torture. If I had to choose, let's see. So if you had to choose, Ben, I mean, I know you say it would be torture, but if I said you can only take home one and you have 30 seconds to decide, which one would you take?
Well, in that case, I would have taken the BMW Z8.
Yeah.
And then probably would have sold it and bought some of the other ones. Not that I would have sold it easily, because I like that as well.
Yes. Yes, it's a sharp-looking car.
Yeah.
That's a good strategy. And in my case, if I had to take home one and you gave me 30 seconds to decide, I keep going back to that Quattro.
Yeah, that was really, really nice.
And just because, it, you know, for me, it's just a piece of my memory that I was very fond of. It was a car that that I'm like, man, that just looks like so much fun.
Yes.
And it was getting such rave reviews back in the 80s when I was learning how to drive.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a hard choice. I would have a hard choice to pick between that Quattro, that M5, that Darth Vader M5 that we were looking at.
Yeah.
That black one. And the BMW 635 CSI.
Yeah, those were really cool. I built a couple models of those. There were a lot of BMWs I built models of growing up. The 6 was one of the ones that I built a couple of. And I would look at them on my shelf and fantasize, you know, about owning one someday.
Yep.
you know, another one that stands out, too, is my friends Dan and Pam brought a Mercedes today. I forget the year, but it's, you know, 1970-ish, 68, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a big green four-door. And it's, you know, it's a dark green with a, you know, tan leather interior. It's got a 4-speed column shift manual and a 6-cylinder engine. And, you know, it's a comfy, luxurious sedan. It's not flashy necessarily, but it's got charisma.
Yeah.
And Dan tells me that it's the perfect car to go out to dinner in the evening, just ride along and feel the smooth comfort and just soak up all that charm that it has.
I wonder if it has power steering.
I don't know.
It's old enough not to, and meaning it's old enough not to and not suffer from it.
Right. But being Mercedes, who knows? It might.
Yeah, it might. But yeah, it looks like just a perfect coach vehicle, a good, you know, let's go out to dinner in the Mercedes kind of thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Just totally comforting. So did you have an item of car trivia, German car trivia for us today?
Oh, yes. Thanks for reminding me. Mm-hmm. Well, the one that I kept zeroing, it was kind of a tough choosing because there's so many stories there, but the one I zeroed back to is the question basically is, what year did Volkswagen come to the United States?
Ooh. Okay, what year did Volkswagen come to the U.S.? And I'm going to have a hard time even narrowing it down by decade. I'm pretty sure it's not the 60s, unless it was the 60s and the hippie moment started to help it take off. You had all those people in VWs back in those days. Could it have been the 50s, post-war 50s?
You're close.
Close? Would it have been post-war 40s in that case?
Yeah.
And not pre-war 40s because nothing.
There was no VW pre-war. Well, I mean, there were things that led up to it.
But yeah, yeah. So
not the actual item.
Volkswagen ended up in the States post-war 40s?
Yeah.
And the United States didn't mind, having just beaten the Germans, and there was no anti-German sentiment that made their arrival difficult?
Well, it's hard to say. I wasn't walking around at the time.
Yeah.
And they didn't come in a big way.
Oh.
The year was 1949.
Oh.
And they brought two cars.
Two?
And I have read that the U.S. sales agent had to sell his demo car to buy some train fare or something. it was a very inauspicious beginning. As far as sentiment goes, I don't know, because a lot of World War II was... And I don't want to dig into a whole lot of history here, but our problem with the Germans was not with the nation as a whole, really. It was with its leadership.
Sure.
And Hitler wasn't even German; he was Austrian.
I guess that's true.
It was a good country that had a bad government, and that's where we had the problem.
Yeah.
You know, we certainly had lots and lots of cultural ties with the Germans, you know, before then. You know, German almost became an official U.S. language once, believe it or not.
Ah.
But the German people themselves, no problem. I think, you know, a lot of Americans kind of have trouble letting go of some of the, you know, maybe rivalries and aggressions, but... You know, I think the main reason VW took a while to succeed in the United States was less to do with culture and more with the product.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the 1950s, when they were bringing a few more, this was still a time when, you know, cheap practical motoring was not a big priority in the United States.
Right, right.
You know, you could still buy a big, huge American car for, you know, average working man's wages and fuel cost nothing.
Right.
So a little funny little foreign car like a Volkswagen, just, you know, nobody really wanted except for a few weirdos.
Right, right.
But they stuck it out. And, you know, sooner or later in the 60s, when, you know, you started to have some young kids who were driving more and more and needed something a little less expensive.
Cheap and easy to get to.
And then, of course, you know, the hippies came along, and they I think they kind of latched onto the weirdness of the VWs.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, the rest is history. And, you know, by the 70s, they were a major brand in the United States.
And now they own everybody.
Just about, yeah.
I hear that Lamborghini is now part of the whole VW. There's the, what's the whole name? VW something? That motoring group?
Yeah, I don't even. Well, the VW Audi group is what I often hear referred to. And yeah, they do own a lot of things.
Right.
You know, big worldwide footprint and presence. They want to be the largest automaker in the world. I don't have a very optimistic feelings about that because, you know, there's a couple of quality issues here and there. But and I don't mean to put VW down when I say that. But,
sure.
You know, I've had some experiences with them that make me wonder how they're going to do with it. But still pretty decent cars overall.
Yeah.
I rented one the other week on one of my biz trips.
Yeah. And how was it?
Oh, well, for the day or two that I had it, it was okay. Seat was a little flat and hard. That's one of my criticisms with their current models. Mm-hmm. But, you know, good car overall.
Yep.
Did what it was supposed to.
I've never driven one. Actually, that's not true in terms of VW alone. A friend of mine, when I was first learning to drive stick, she's like, here, you can drive stick in my Scirocco.
Oh, nice.
Which is really nice.
My first car was a 73 Super Beetle.
Yeah.
And I'm told that I was brought home from being born in a 66 Beetle that my parents owned. And I have vague memories of this car.
Yes.
Pretty cool. And my parents, they went on a European vacation in 1971, 3 weeks in Europe. Or was it five? I think it was three. But they took some money with them. The Super Beetle had just come out in 71.
Mm-hmm.
And their plan was to bring one home. They got to Germany and found that the exchange rate was better than they'd anticipated.
Mm.
It was much more in their favor than they'd expected. So they looked around and said, well, we can buy more car than that Super Beetle. So they wound up buying a little red BMW 1600. Is a two-door. And many Americans aren't familiar with the 1600. It was the same car as a 2002, just with a little bit less engine. And they brought it back to the United States. And the following year, we moved down to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, where, if I'm not mistaken, I think we may well have had the first BMW in Tuscaloosa.
No kidding.
And they had, you know, no real U.S. dealer network or presence at the time, so nobody knew what it was. And, you know, these were not luxurious cars at the time. BMW was not a real premium brand in those days. It was basic. It had a black vinyl interior, four-speed gearbox, hand crank windows, all that stuff. But it was a good little car.
Sure. So let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
We're talking about German cars. I'm about to drag us into modern and no longer vintage. but everything I hear about modern-day Mercedes and modern-day BMWs in particular is that the ethic around engine builds has dropped, that they're using more plastic in their engines, and anywhere you try to use plastic in conjunction with metal, things fall apart. So this is why, after a certain amount of time, you can buy nice high-end BMWs and nice high-end Mercedes for next to nothing because people are trying to dump them before they really fail.
Partly. I think the whole thing with plastic components is maybe an oversimplification.
Okay.
I will point out that my 2013 Mazda, my 2013 Mazda has a plastic valve cover, and at 103,000 miles, it's not showing any signs of distress.
Interesting. So the actual valve cover.
Yes.
The thing that sits on top of the gasket.
Yeah.
Not the cowling.
No, yeah, the actual cover for the valve train is plastic.
And it's no...
Not a problem.
Not suffering at all.
No leaks, no cracks, nothing like that. So, I don't know. I mean, as far as recent German cars, I know they're all really incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
You know, they really overcomplicated things for a long time. I think Mercedes is trying to dial that back a little bit in these last few years. But, very technically complicated vehicles. Of course, this makes the price a bit inflated sometimes, too. If you've driven a late model BMW, and I have in some of my business travels, they are super complicated. Lots of menus and screens and, you know, things like that. And you know, BMW and VW both, their infotainment systems are a nightmare as far as finding things in them and controlling things. A VW radio has no seek and scan button. You've got to go into menus and dial around and stuff. And, it just makes me want to pull my hair out. Give me an old, 1970 Blaupunkt with two knobs on it and I'm A-okay.
But, yes, thank you.
And modern radios don't have to be complicated. They just they chose to make them complicated for whatever reason. But, sure. But yes, the thing with high-end cars selling for really cheap because of maintenance and repair issues is absolutely correct.
Okay.
You know, you could find, you know, the Mercedes, for instance, made some V12 cars in the 90s that you can get for four figures these days.
Wow.
And part of it is because they cost so damn much to keep going once they reach a certain age.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, like the compressor models. Compressor is the German term for a supercharger, because that's all it really is. It's something that compresses the air in the intake.
Right.
But, once the supercharger wears out, you're looking at a really steep bill to fix that.
Yeah. Well, it's been a good day.
It has.
There's only one other thing I wanted to touch on before we sign off, is that we've talked about BMWs and VWs, and we've seen some cool Porsches and whatnot. I only saw two Opals today. Did you see any other Opals?
I think those are the only two that I saw, yeah.
Are they the only two in Atlanta?
And they were both GTs. I doubt they're the only two in Atlanta, but you don't see them driving around much because they haven't been a presence in the United States since the 70s.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were on the cheap end as German cars went. They were the everyman car. They were a division of GM.
Yep.
Still are. They still make Opals. They just haven't sold them here in 40 years.
Yeah, right. They are still viable manufacturer, that's for sure.
But the ones they made in the 70s were, you know, kind of low quality. They rusted out.
Yep.
They developed oil leaks. You know, they were just cheap cars. And you know, this is one of the secrets about German industrial production and cars in particular. It's not that they don't make cars that aren't superb. It's just that they have the sense to not export the ones that aren't as sharp. And so, you know, they learned their lesson with Opel. They pulled out of the United States at some point. And
is this the redheaded stepchild? You just don't talk about them that much?
I guess. Yeah. And there are lower-end BMWs that they don't sell over here. Some of the one series, you know, before the one that we did get.
Yeah.
You know, things like that, yeah.
It's like we don't talk about the kid's neighbor, the neighbor's kids that much. So, all in all, a good show, and I hope we get to come back and play with these guys next year. And we did actually see a few of our friends here on site this time, so thanks for coming out. And if you're in our audience and want us to come to your show, don't hesitate to contact us via our website, thethingaboutcars.com. Though Facebook is probably a little better these days, just a little quicker. That's facebook.com/thethingaboutcars, if I'm not mistaken. But thanks, as always, for being a part of our listening family. We will see you with another episode in about a week. Take care, everybody.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen. Let's go find some schnitzel.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.